This is a tripod broadcast.
Well, let's start recording, so...
We just did.
Okay, cool. I think this is a key show to listen to because it's all about emotional masturbation. Journalistic integrity. It encapsulates everything that we're about.
And I'm sorry.
Now, give that some thought.
Yeah.
With Addison...
I can't be mad at you. You got a haircut.
And Matt.
I would recommend that you stop listening right now.
He is too funny.
No, he's not.
He's a friend to the show, Matt. Comedian, father, heartthrob, Tracy Morgan.
Heartthrob? Are we ready to go?
Yeah, we're on. I just don't understand why you hate Tracy Morgan.
I don't hate Tracy Morgan. It's
you
just...
clearly do.
No, I don't hate him.
You said you hoped he died.
I didn't say I hoped he died. I said it in jest. I was telling that a story to you, saying it in jest. And when I said it, it was in jest anyway. But
don't jest other on, people, on a serious journalistic show.
Other
like,
people did die, okay?
In the accident, yeah.
Yeah, and now everybody's... I've read something online that everybody's up in arms over how they... About how tractor trailers need to be safer and how... Like it's tractor trailers are dangerous to other motorists on the road, and that's a big steaming pile of bull.
Well, it's either a big steaming pile of bull or it's always been that way.
Yeah, but the big
like it's one of those things that like it's the same thing with airlines. Like how many flights a day a year go by without a hitch? Get off the ground,
yeah.
Carry passengers across the country or across the world, land, the passengers get off, right?
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of flights.
Sure.
And then you have one that disappears, and everyone's like, airlines need to be safer. And it's like, okay, maybe they do, but on the flip side, when you look at the math...
You go into Moman? All right, I'll see you later. Yeah.
I'm just saying, when you look at the math...
Yeah.
It's the point to take away from that is not these need to be safer.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Same thing with that accident. Like, the point to take away from this is not tractor trailers need to be safer. Like, could they be? Sure, maybe there's some things you could do. But on the flip side, how many tractor trailers go across the country every single day? Hundreds
Millions.
Of thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
On a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And how many people get killed by them? A pretty small number.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not for people getting killed. I'm all for not people not getting killed. But I'm just saying.
But I'm going to tell you this in almost every instance of a,
of people getting killed.
No, of a tractor trailer being in an accident.
Right.
It's not their fault. It's another car around them that was causing problems for them. And I guarantee
probably,
you, it's like probably. It's going to be this and that this situation once we find out what happened, because those guys drive professionally.
Right.
Okay. They're better drivers than everyone else out there.
Right.
Okay. And they're driving huge, huge pieces of steel. And they're driving 80 miles
across
an hour.
The country and,
across the country.
Mm-hmm. For many
and
hours.
They're doing
and many
it
miles.
Hours and hours and hours at a time.
Yep.
And it's that's the backbone of our industry. That's the reason why Walmart has.
They're the new railways.
Well, no, but that's the reason why Walmart can have fresh fruit.
Yeah.
Every day of the week,
yeah,
right?
Or Quick Trip, or whoever else.
That
yeah.
comes all the way from Mexico, mm-hmm. and they have a truck that comes from Mexico every couple days, bringing them fresh fruit, or from wherever. Like
right.
it's the reason why you are able to go to the Walmart and buy whatever you want, or go to a store and buy whatever you want, is because of tractor trailers.
And at the very least, it'll be like, oh, it'll come in tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like if for some reason it's not on the shelf, they'll be like, well, it'll be here tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember actually, here's behind the scenes. I used to work at Walmart. And I was a cart guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wrangle carts, get them in, the goal was, that what we were always told was the goal was that there's always carts in the cart corral, right? So
sure.
So that a customer could come in and grab a cart and be about their business. I and the other guy who I worked with most of the time, we would get called into the back a lot to do truck because they didn't have enough people to help unload the trucks, which is fine, whatever, just a different kind of job for a while. It's the same kind of work, you know, you're unloading a truck, you know, about how it is. And Walmart's trucks, I've unloaded trucks before. I unload trucks at my job now, right? We get truck 3 days a week, usually one of them, sometimes two of them I'm there for, right? Comes at 6 a.m., mm-hmm. it's about five pallets. He unloads them and then we carry them inside. Walmart's trucks are unlike any other truck I've ever seen. I don't know if they still do this, or if this is just the way it was when I was there, but their trucks, like, they would back into, there was like a dock, right? And so they'd back in and kind of the back end of the bed would kind of go into the dock. So it was, you know, just a nice yeah, all the mm-hmm. way in the building.
You're talking to somebody who worked for 2 years for UPS. I know what you're talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. Well, yeah. So they would get ready to open the I don't know, hatch or whatever you want to call it at the back of the truck. Uh-huh. And they would tell everyone to stand back because there were no pallets. There was no stacking. Everything in a Walmart semi, like a full 18-wheeler semi, mm-hmm. was like they would open it and boxes would fall out. Sure. I mean, and these boxes were DVD players, TVs, whatever the store needed was all just shoved into the truck. Mm-hmm. Literally, like, put in there with not an inch to spare. And with no pallets, no stacking whatsoever. It was very weird because that's not... I mean, I guess that's how you can do it, but it's not yeah. really what I'm familiar with.
Are you sure it wasn't just stuff that had moved during transit?
There was no stacking at all. Like there was no, and all the way to
so
the back.
So even all the way to the back.
And there was one guy who would be like the point guy because they'd have a conveyor belt, which would come, they would kind of wheel it in there uh-huh. and that's yeah. what would take them, you know, or maybe it was the wheels and you just kind of shove it along. And they would wheel that farther and farther into mm-hmm. the truck. And there was one guy who was that point guy who would just grab those boxes and no, it was just stuffed in there. Like there were no pallets, no stacking, no shelving of any sort. Mm-hmm. Just here's an empty canister that is being filled with the maximum amount of boxes. And there was no, that was our job when we were unloading the truck because there was no organization to it. It wasn't like, okay, now here's dry goods. Okay, mm-hmm. now here's electronics. Like you would, as you were on that line, you would shove a DVD player down there and then like a case of soap and then like a big box of t-shirts. Like that's how they did it. Maybe that's more efficient, I guess. I don't know if that's, I don't know, like maybe it makes more sense financially on the warehouse end and the store end to just shove that stuff in there and be like, okay, here you get 12 trucks a week or whatever, you know, a store gets or a couple trucks a day or whatever it is. But it was really weird because I don't think that's how you're supposed to load a truck. Yeah. Anyways. Everything all right?
Yeah. Welcome to Give That Some Thought. I'm Matt sitting
Matt
across
just
from me.
On his phone.
Is Addison
scrolling through it? Now he's attempting to
no, there was
pretend
a,
that he was
no, there
involved
was
that, the
I was
whole
actually
time.
Looking at something we had talked about on last week's show.
Why?
Which was the NASA budget.
I know. I can see the headline.
And Congress approving a budget for NASA.
Why do we have to talk about this again? Our listeners are going to get
well,
bored
because
you're talking about the same things
no,
from show to show.
They're
to
not going to get bored because what I'm about to do is something that's never happened on Give That Some Thought. It's Give That Some Thought. History moment.
Are you going to renege?
I am going to renege.
Are you going to say that all the money that goes to NASA is pointless?
No,
oh.
I'm not.
Well, what are you going to say? Let's just start with that and go from there. Anyways, yeah, welcome to Give That Some Thought. My name is Addison. Joining my co-host, Matt Hume, a man with so little information and yet so very many opinions. Matt Hume.
This is from a blog called SciGuy.
Okay. It sounds official. Go
a
ahead.
Science blog with Eric with Eric Berger. So Eric,
and who is
Eric
it's
Berger?
Just a science, I guess.
This is a blog about
Scientist.
Science.
Okay.
A blog that I read. NSA budget bill could include.
That you read.
I know, I don't
that
read.
You, yeah,
I don't read
I'm
blogs.
Calling bullcrap on that. You pulled it from Reddit right
it's
now.
It's true, yeah. NSA budget
a
bill.
A blog
could,
that I read. That's the funniest moment of the show
shut
right
up.
Here.
Shut up.
We eclipsed in 8 minutes. Go ahead.
NSA budget bill could include a poison pill for SpaceX.
NASA budget bill.
Yeah.
Okay.
NASA budget bill could include a poison pill for SpaceX and other commercial companies.
Wait. Okay, what?
A poison pill, okay. It's a metaphor.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
Buried within the bill.
As bills usually do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be something of a poison pill for a company like SpaceX. Allow me to explain. Now, this is the language of the actual bill.
And SpaceX is like private space enterprise.
Yes.
Not have it, yeah.
Private enterprise for the exploration of space, which is something I'm totally on board for.
And I am too.
Because
I think the private sector should put all the money into that and the government
well,
should
that's
put
where you get competition. No, government should, but you also you well, need the government to help other people help do it, but you should also allow private companies if they have enough money, if they have the wherewithal, to do it also.
Right.
The committee directs NASA to maintain FAR 15.403-4. The bill related to the certified cost and pricing data for prime contractors. For any contracts entered into support the development of a commercial crew vehicle. Now, it says three companies are vying for NASA contracts to build smaller spacecraft to replace the shuttle system and give the United States its own transportation to the ISS. Now, right now, our astronauts are hitching ride on Russia with Russian astronauts, and we're going up aboard Russian rockets.
Which
to
is
space.
Weird because they're our enemies.
They're not our enemies. They're like our older brother that we constantly fight with.
It's a pretty good metaphor, actually.
Yeah. If this language is approved by the full Senate and reconciled with the the U.S. House budget bill, it required three companies, Boeing, SpaceX, and Sierra Nevada Corp, to provide detailed cost and financial information about their spacecraft. Basically,
so the government wants to know how much they're spending on space. Or on their space crew.
That, but they also, it's basically, the government now has the ability, if you're going into space with this bill,
right,
you have to, your standards have to be the same as NASA. So basically, you're instituting a standardization for
space travel.
Well, for the space travel industry before it has even become an industry. So normally we have an industry spring up, people start making a lot of money, you have a lot of innovation, ingenuity, a lot of ways.
Like the automobile industry.
It helps society, and then after you get to the point where the saturation of society and everybody's using this technology,
right,
that's when you come along and you have to regulate it to make sure people are using it safely and responsibly. But if you immediately start regulating something like this, like a private space travel companies have only been around for maybe 10 or 15 years.
Is that what this is?
Basically, they're trying to control all these companies and make sure that their technologies don't get too far past what NASA already has. That's it in a nutshell.
That's such... What I'm doing in my head right now is trying to find a way that's not the case. But that's totally the case.
Yeah, no, it is. And that's what's got me so angry. That's
so goddamn frustrating.
That's why I'm putting out a retraction, is that this bill is not a good thing. Yes, NASA, I want to give more money to NASA all the time, but what this bill does, it doesn't give more money to NASA. It makes sure that everybody else in America, when it comes to private space travel, maintains NASA's status quo.
And is held back by NASA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not held back by NASA, but maintains NASA's status quo.
Yeah.
And doesn't get too far ahead of NASA.
Yeah.
And that's what the problem is. It's taking these private companies like SpaceX, like Sierra Nevada, like Boeing, who are honestly trying to develop ways to go into space to make them more money, but also as these companies make more money going into space, space travel is going to become cheaper.
Yeah.
But in 60 years, we haven't done a whole lot with the technology of actually going to space. We've had a lot of technologies come out of NASA that have helped us in other areas.
Sure.
Propulsion, solar technology, things like that. We've talked about that before. But we really haven't gone too much farther than we were in the 80s as far as
in terms
space
of actual travel
space
flight. Right. Yeah.
In fact, we've gone back because our shuttle program is scrapped. We know the United States no longer has the ability to actually go in, send astronauts into space.
Right.
Yet we have three companies here in America giving out jobs in America where we could have a booming space travel industry if only NASA and the House Budgetary Committee would let go and let private... Okay, this is a historic moment. Let private companies do what they're going to do.
There it is.
And not try and control
Matt
them so
Hume
much.
Matt Hume being confronted by his own beliefs, ladies and gentlemen, right here on Give That Some Thought. We'll be right back.
Here's the thing.
Listen, where your head's at with this.
And I know there's one person in particular on Twitter who I constantly ignore, but he's always talking about how my views on everything are terrible. I know he's going to agree with me, but I have the right to change my mind. I'm a human being.
You're a woman. Oh.
No. I'm a human being.
Okay. All right. Got it.
With logical centers of my brain, who can make decisions.
Okay, so you're not
a
woman.
Oh, either I was wrong. Who can say I was wrong, or I've changed my mind. Okay.
I like how, depending on the conversation,
I've done a 180 or like a 90 degrees.
One of us is serious, and the other one's just like, here's minor bits of sexism. Yeah.
And here's a bit.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, I haven't changed my mind about NASA, but
sure.
This especially, frustrates me. And it doesn't change my mind about the way I feel about privatized space travel, because I've felt the same way, is that we should allow these companies to do what they need to do and do what they want to do.
Yeah. And here, let me take...
To get into space. But we... What this bill is doing and what NASA is doing right now is holding private companies back because they're saying, well, we don't want you to get too far ahead of us. But, I mean, what would happen if they did that with Howard Hughes back in the 40s and 50s, right? Where would commercial airline travel be today?
Right.
You know?
Well, that's the thing. Let me take this one step back and look at a quick big picture here. It's interesting to me because there's some things that the government is really like there's some industries where they only try and regulate certain weird things, right? Like cellular technology, for example. They don't really care about the companies and what they're doing, but what they care about is like is the, they have the FCC and they're looking at certain spectrums of mobile bandwidth and things like that, right? Like a really weird thing to regulate.
Everything.
And then you have something like this where the whole industry they're trying to say no, it has to be on par with the government's program. Like, why? It's so weird to me that they're dicks about certain things and certain ways of doing things and certain industries that have the potential in the next 10, 20, 50 years to go leaps and bounds ahead of what we ever thought they were going to be. Right. Sure. I mean, I've never said that that's not going to be the case. I mean, I believe that my kids will have the opportunity to pay enough money and go see a moon set. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, just go out there and check out the moon and the sun.
It would still be called a sunset.
We'd be a moonset.
Even if it was on the moon.
It'd be a moonset.
No, because we're here on Earth and we call it sunset.
Right.
Because it's so the sun space, that's setting, not the Earth that's
space,
setting. It's still a sunset.
Your only light that you could see would be the moon.
No, if you're in space, the only light you could see... are you talking about being on the moon?
No, I'm talking about being in space.
Just
if you're in
space,
the only light you have is the moon.
No, you have the sun because the sun's there.
But you can't see it in the way that we can see it on Earth because of the atmosphere.
Yeah, but you can see a lot more of the sun, actually.
But you'd see a lot more of the moon.
Like, dims the sun.
You'd see most of the moon.
Well, you could, but it would still...
It'd be a moonset.
It would be a sunset.
But the sun would never set because you're in space.
Yeah, but let's say the sun went... the moon went between you and the sun.
Uh-huh.
It would be a sunset,
polar
not
eclipse.
A moonset. No.
That's what that would be.
There is no such thing as a polar eclipse.
There is now.
How can... To have a polar eclipse, like one pole would
have
to
separate...
Do you
know what a polar eclipse is?
And then go...
No, do you know what a polar eclipse is?
What is a polar eclipse?
It's when a bunch of polar bears get together and watch an eclipse. <laughs> 17 minutes in, I've already convinced him to quit the show right now.
No, it's just... No.
Joining you as your host, spreading misinformation faster than anything you could comprehend it, Addison Todd.
Yeah. And your co-host, constantly frustrated, Matt.
About space? I do think that private enterprise is key in this area, and honestly,
absolutely.
I mean, because the last time we talked
more
about
than
this,
it is in a lot of other industries.
Well, and
because
the
there
last
has
time we talked
because
about this,
NASA,
that's what I said,
NASA was, has had a monopoly on space travel for 50 years now,
except for
in
other
America,
countries. Yeah,
in America.
Yeah.
And the only thing that has accomplished is now we have
a bankrupt government program.
Well, no, not a bankrupt government program, but now we have to hitch a ride with Russians. With Russia,
if we want to get on the space station,
if we want to go to the ISS,
right?
and that's something we're not going to stop doing. So,
why not build our own planes?
Yeah. We really do need to help. We don't need to fund these companies, but we do need to let them do what they're going to do.
Deregulate as much as possible.
No,
especially
not
for a new
deregulate,
industry.
But you know, we want to make sure what they're doing is safe. But we also don't want to strangle them.
Why?
Anyway,
if it's a private company. Who's going to be held liable? They are.
Yeah.
Let them do what they want. Small government, man. Libertarian. Let them do what they want.
Well, we're in a situation now where they can do what they want and all they have to do is pay enough money and they can get away with it.
Oh, is that how it works?
Goldman Sachs and...
Oh, here he goes.
BP.
Here he goes. Bankers at 18 minutes in.
but I was going to... You brought up communications the internet and stuff like that.
Yes.
And that's one thing that has happened over the past five years is in
the FCC's turned into
every,
a huge dick.
Well, FCC's always been a huge dick, but...
They're more of a huge dick now that there's more of a broad spectrum, though. Like, now that there's more information that you can access, they're bigger dicks.
Yeah. But every bill...
And with net neutrality, like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a flat-out joke.
But I was about to get into that, but every bill that's come... down the pipe for the past 5 years concerning communications and cell phones and the internet and FCC and whatever has done nothing more than create a way for the government to control the internet.
Or try to, yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's a way to monopolize and monetize access to the internet. Not just services on the internet,
mm-hmm.
but simple access to the internet.
Right.
And that's where we are now. Where a couple years from now, we're going to be paying out the yin-yang for internet. We're going to be paying by how much information we download off the internet, just like you do with your water meter or your, you know, your electric. So, yeah. That's where we are with that.
See, the thing about the internet is I think that's an industry that is so, maybe volatile is the wrong word, but I think it's an industry that is so widespread and there's so many different aspects to it that I don't think that the people of the internet, and I say that vaguely, obviously, but I don't think that the people of the internet would let that happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I think the technology is such that if that happened, you know, I mean, I say Google, I don't really mean them. They'd probably be the first one to just do whatever the government asked. But the next Google would be like, no, we're going to do it this way. And these kinds of things are going to be free. And this kind mm-hmm. of stuff is going to be accessible to everybody. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like that. I feel like there would be, maybe it'd be too hard. Maybe I'm being too, you know, hopeful in that event. But I feel like the internet is such that it wouldn't be that much harder for somebody to just say, this is wrong. We're going to do it this way.
Yeah.
And it would be wildly, you know, crowdfunded even, you know, mm-hmm. or open source, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. So bottom line, NASA shouldn't get any money.
Bottom line, nobody should be getting any more money.
No one at all?
No one at all. There's too much money.
Me either?
No one. Not even you.
Okay.
We should go back to like...
just bartering?
with shells and beads.
You know, it would be really cool if there was a currency that only, like, was only going to have a certain amount ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, because then it would... the price or the value of that currency would only relate to the market,
mm-hmm.
would only relate to its market. It's a yeah. shame we don't have anything like that.
Yeah. And if you could have that and then be tangible as well, like something you can hold in your hand, something that someone
See,
could
but
have
with the
worth
way that,
and you don't have
the,
to,
with
you
the way
have
that
to
everyone
rely
has
on
internet
like
access, I feel like it,
or
would,
like
I feel like it wouldn't even be necessary
down,
for it to be tangible
maybe,
because
like,
if
like,
it was a
like
digital
an EMP
currency,
pulse from the sun
that
just come over and just develop the solar system.
And what you could do is
wipe out
just,
humanity
you
and all communications.
And it would be like email was in the 90s. And then everybody, who said Bitcoin? What do you mean Bitcoin? What's this Bitcoin you speak of? You said Bitcoin.
Yeah, I said Bitcoin.
What do you mean by Bitcoin?
EMP pulse is going to wipe out all life on the solar system.
What do you mean by Bitcoin? What's Bitcoin?
Bitcoin.
Yeah, what do you mean? Huh. I didn't say anything about Bitcoin.
No, I just...
Did you? That's interesting. Tell me about Bitcoin, sir.
Well, no, it's like I had this psychic pulse that came through me, like an EMP pulse that was like, whoosh, Bitcoin, and Bitcoin just popped in my head and then popped out of my mouth. I've never heard of it before.
Really?
What is Bitcoin?
Weird.
Yeah.
Well, let's Google it real quick.
Well, Google Bitcoin, see what it is.
Look at that. It's a decentralized anonymous cryptocurrency.
Wow.
That's available on every nation on Earth, and all you need is internet access to use it.
You Google really fast.
I do.
Hmm.
I'm a pretty good Googler.
It's like you actually knew what Bitcoin was before you Googled it. But
I certainly didn't.
Okay.
Wow. Bottom line, Bitcoin's the future of currency.
It's not tangible. It's not the future.
It's the future. It's the economic future of the world.
Yeah, well, what about
concept.
An EMP pulse
What do you mean
the
it's
sun?
Not tangible?
Wiping out all of our electronic communications.
Why would that
frying
happen?
Frying every motherboard on Earth.
Then you would have bigger problems than how many Bitcoins you lost during that.
Sure, but that's why you can't have a completely electronic cryptocurrency.
No, it's not. That's not the reason you can't have it. There is no reason you can't have it. It's the perfect system.
Yeah, but if that system was implemented, people would just get around it.
What do you mean?
Get around Bitcoin.
How?
There's a way to get...
Stop fiddling
with
your mic
stand.
There
would be a way to get around it. Like, you give people enough time, they're going to solve the problem of how to get into Bitcoin and steal it.
There's no... That's impossible.
How is it impossible?
Because of the cryptography and the mathematics behind it, it's impossible to do that.
If somebody had to come up with the mathematics to encrypt it, then another person can decipher those mathematics.
But it's not.
They just have to have a fast enough computer or be smart enough. That's all. It's just a matter of speed. That's not how cryptography works.
Because Bitcoin is based off of the blockchain, which is a public record, a public ledger of all Bitcoin transactions, mm-hmm. including Bitcoin that are created right
yeah.
as time goes along. So there's no way that you can steal it. There's no way that you can do that, or that anybody could do that, because there's a public record accessible to everyone that uses Bitcoin. That has a record of where every Bitcoin is and every piece of Bitcoin is. So there's no way you can falsify those transactions okay. or change All them right. or move them around.
Okay. So it's a currency that okay, I see. But still, even then, like, it's a currency to where if you have
now
some...
Now we're going
to
go back to EMP pulses from the sun as your main...
People know exactly reason. How much you have.
When was the last time the sun EMP pulsed anyways?
No, but I don't know.
I think my wife EMP pulses about once a month,
Ooh.
But... Sorry. Anyways, I love you. No, so there's no real gripe with Bitcoin. Like, there's no
from your point
to borrow from your vocabulary, there's no tangible reason why it won't work. To change the way we do business, to change the way economics are done on this planet.
There is one tangible reason, and it's that Bitcoin is intangible.
That doesn't mean
it's
anything,
a tangible,
though.
Tangible.
So is everything.
It's
so
an
is
intangible
most of the
tangible.
Dollars. So is most
it's an
of
intangible
the dollars.
Tangible.
So is you have trouble over there. So is
I
most of the dollars that
the
we're
time.
Moving around now. Most of the dollars and cents or whatever you want to say, mm-hmm. most of the money that's being moved around now is intangible as it is.
But those are tangible. Those are intangible tangibles. We're talking about tangible intangibles.
I feel like you're getting a mite hung up on a certain vernacular here.
Potato, potato.
Yeah.
No, just the word of the day is tangible. That's all.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, so...
Word of the day is tangible.
All right.
If you want to track conversation with this episode on Twitter, use the hashtag tangible. This podcast is intangible. When it goes out, you can't touch it.
Oh, you can always touch it.
And we're...
All right, so digression.
And we're famous besides that.
Yeah, so digression. Last week on the show, I told a story about how I went to strip club.
Are all you going to do this episode to talk about last week's episode?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
Then go ahead. Yes, you told a story about how you went to strip club.
And how
did
I
you get
lost...
any birthday tweets, by the way? Any peanut butter jars?
Oh, yeah, I got a bunch. I'll tell you about those in a minute. But
okay.
I got... I lost my ID and everything.
Uh-huh.
So today is part two. Of that story.
Oh, okay.
Got up at 11. I was telling you this before, but then you went off on something else.
I try not listen to you.
Got up like around 11, cleaned the apartment because it was just messy from the weekend.
Oh, look
I'd
at
been
you.
Working
being a
all
good
weekend.
Roommate.
Vacuum,
you want to come
did
clean
dishes,
my apartment?
Did some laundry, cleaned up, took out the trash, everything.
Right.
And then I had to go get my license back from
Fun.
The gas station I left it.
How was the DMV?
Oh, I didn't go to the DMV. I went back to the east side to go get my license because I couldn't find my birth certificate.
What?
So
Why?
I couldn't go back. I couldn't actually go to the DMV to actually get the just a replacement one.
So I should be thanking God again that you're still alive.
Yeah, so I had to go back to the east side.
Did you buy any heroin while you were over there?
No. Oh. I had to get this. I got my ID from the gas station.
But you were
and
offered.
I came back. So, yeah. And then ran around doing stupid errands all day, and it's just, ugh. I hate having to pay bills and run errands and cash checks.
Aww.
And
are you gonna be okay?
Handle money like I hate. I'm happier when I have no money at all than I am when I have money. Seriously, for some reason,
it's almost
just,
like if all your money was in a digital format. And
no,
you could just,
I,
and
if
you
all
could
my money
push...
was in digital format, I would be checking the internet every day, saying, "Oh, how much money do I have?" and obsessing over it. No, I'd rather have it in paper, and when it's gone, it's gone, and I'm happier about it. Anyway, but speaking of my birthday, I did get.
Because you still run off, like, those old, like, green credit cards, right?
Yeah.
Like, what are those? Like, it's like...
The green
like,
credit cards
green.
You can tear in half?
Yeah. They're like...
Uh-huh.
What are they called again?
It's called dollar bills.
Right. Yeah. You still... It's
bills of currency.
Yeah, so you still use those. And yeah. You have to turn those in, or how does that... It's like a... Can you
no,
get,
you just keep them, stuff them in your mattress.
You can't take them somewhere and get gold for them?
No.
Oh.
Nope.
Seems like kind of a ripoff,
it
to be
is.
Honest.
It
I get
is.
1% cash back on MasterCard. I'm just saying.
Do you?
I do.
Yeah.
1% is nothing to sneeze at, bro.
Sure. Sure. Pay 7% interest, but 1% back. Oh, yeah.
It's actually like 23% interest.
Oh. Okay then. So no, my birthday tweets. I did get a. I got a couple.
Yeah.
My favorite though was from Trevor.
Okay.
He took a picture, I guess, of his kitchen cabinet.
Edgy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it had Peter Pan honey roasted.
Oh, so instant it, friend mode there.
Like I think it was like, which is my favorite peanut butter.
Yes.
It had Jif Crunchy and Jif Smooth, I think it was.
The man has, I feel, more peanut butters than are necessary for...
I like the...
Is he running a charity
over
there?
He had three different peanut butters, just ready to go. And yeah. I was like, this guy's my... He sends me the picture, and the caption said, here are my peanut butters. I have other butters. These are the peanut ones. And I cracked up. I just lost it. And then, like 10 minutes later, I pulled it up again. I looked at it, and I had another little giggle.
Giggled again, yeah.
I just like the fact he had so many peanut butter and so many different peanut butters. He had my favorite one, and then he's like, also like, these are my peanut butters.
Yeah.
I have other butters.
Right.
But these are my peanut ones.
Right. Well, I'm glad you had a good birthday.
It tickled me to no end, so.
That's good.
Thanks, Trevor. Thanks, Trevor, for the birthday
that,
giggle.
Retweeted it, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Good. Happy birthday.
Anyway, Addison, what do you want to talk about?
I've got a couple things here. I feel like there's something else I was about to say. I didn't stop touching your mic stand. I'm trying to think of which one of these I want to pull up. You want to talk about that at all? Have you seen any of that news? You haven't? Let's talk about this. This is interesting. About artificial intelligence.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear about this?
I was reading about it last night. It's fake.
It's fake. What? No, it's not.
Yep. They had to lower the standards of the test for the computer to be able to pass. Anyway, go ahead and read the headline.
I mean, why now should I do that thing?
They lowered it like 200 points so this computer could pass, but go ahead.
Who says that?
Reddit.
Well, then it might as well be written in stone.
I know, right?
By the Aztecs of old. No, what?
Doesn't need to be written in stone. It's written on the walls of Reddit.
There's a lot of things written on the walls of Reddit. Let's be honest. No, this article didn't mention that.
None of them did.
Then how do you know that's not true? Did you get that from our conspiracy?
No, it was from our news.
Which is like a saner our conspiracy. The test, organized at the Royal Society on Saturday, featured 5 programs in total. Judges included.
First off, okay, explain what the actual.
Yeah, well, in case you
about.
Haven't caught on or seen the headline, a computer passed this test that was. I think the test has been around for a
Turing
while.
Turing test.
Yes.
Turing test. It's named after a certain scientist in the 1940s and
50s. Who invented the test?
No, he didn't invent the test.
Are you sure?
He made a statement, and then later computer scientists based. This
test off that idea.
Off his idea
right.
of computers becoming sentient and being able to problem solve on by themselves without actually being programmed to problem solve. Because mm-hmm. now, if you have a computer that's going to be a problem solving computer, you have to program it to solve problems.
Right.
But basically, what we're talking about here is a computer that can self program, which
a learning computer
that
artificial
can teach
intelligence.
Itself.
Yes. Right.
Which is the first basis
human-like intelligence.
It's the first basis of artificial intelligence. And this scientist, I think it was Alan Turing, is his name, or something like that.
Yeah. I don't even think he's
back in the
this
40s
article.
And 50s. He came up with this hypothesis that one day computers will be able to teach themselves
mm-hmm.
and won't need programmers anymore. And that is what the Turing test is. It's a benchmark to see whether or not a computer can self-program. But basically what they had to do is they had to lower the standards by which they say a computer can self-program, and this computer was able to pass it. But until that point, until they lowered their standards of what actual self-programming is, this computer wasn't able to pass it. So this whole article is
BS.
Well,
no, that's not... No. I don't think you've got quite the facts here. Computing pioneer Alan Turing said that a computer could be understood to be thinking if it passed the test, which requires that a computer dupes 30% of human interrogators in 5-minute text conversations.
Mm-hmm.
That's the specific test. And because then it has to trick the people into thinking that it's an actual person as opposed to a computer.
Yeah.
And this computer did that. It doesn't say anything about the specifics of the test. Mm-hmm. I don't think the specifics have changed. It says 30% just on that.
It says 30%, right?
Yes. And this computer,
the actual Turing model is 70%, not 30%.
I'm
read. I spent like a, spent like an hour. Spent like an hour reading Reddit this last night. Both one of the articles that was posted and the comments. Is this the thing from the Post, or is it something different?
No, this is the Independent. This okay. is not this, but there's a ton of articles out there about it. Yeah. Like, I saw it all over the place. Alan Turing created the test in a 1950 paper, Computing Machinery and Intelligence. That doesn't really give any specifics about the test. Just, quote, having
a computer... Yeah, it was a hypothetical math equation he put on paper saying, hey, maybe this will be able to figure out...
Having a computer that can trick a human into thinking that someone or even something is a person we trust. Doesn't give any more specifics other than the test.
Mm-hmm.
Or about the test. It doesn't give any more specifics about the test.
Yeah.
It just says that the computer program claims to be a 13-year-old boy from Odessa in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the one part that actually kind of opens the door to what you're claiming here is that, okay, this Vladimir Vysotsilov, one of the creators of the program, quote, our main idea was that he can claim that he knows anything, but his age also makes it perfectly reasonable that he doesn't know everything. We spent a lot of time developing a character with a believable personality.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a little not fishy, but like just thinking about artificial intelligence, if you have, like I've met 13-year-old boys that are dumber than my smartphone. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So where just because you have a computer program that can convince other humans that it's a 13-year-old boy, that doesn't, I don't feel like that means a whole lot.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that it's responding in a way maybe that is human-like.
Yeah.
And I don't know any more specifics of the test other than, like I said, what was in this article. But that's all. I just thought that part was weird because it's like, anyways. What I would like to say is we're probably a couple years away from iRobot happening.
Yeah, I doubt it.
Will Smith having to solve a murder by a robot.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty good.
You know why we're not?
A few years away from that?
Yeah.
Why? I guarantee it's the government or corporations.
No,
but
penis
why?
Envy.
Penis envy?
Penis envy.
Because robots don't have penises?
No, it's the fact that...
What if we gave robots penises, then we wouldn't have this problem.
That man is immediately, as a whole, we're immediately envious, distrustful, and jealous of anything that's smarter or better than we are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So a computer that is smarter than us, that's faster than us, that can outthink us, that is...
Can problem solve better than we can.
That also that is programmed or self-programmed to have a sense of humor and can maybe outwit us, be wittier than we are and funnier than we are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's immediately we're going to feel insecure, and we have penis envy, and so we have to shut that down, right?
You really think that's a reason why this type of technology will never be mainstream?
Not never. I just think that we have to...
think we're taking our sweet time because we're afraid of that
No, I think that as humans, though, we have to get rid of a lot of our insecurities before we can...
that's the most interesting theory I've ever heard.
Yeah, because... We're afraid. Really, we're afraid of being outsmarted. That's what the Matrix is about. It's about machine fear.
I think it's about a lot more than that,
but it's about machine fear. It's about the ghost of the machine coming back to haunt you and ultimately enslave you. And yeah, we are insecure.
It's a really interesting theory.
As a
Matt,
culture, we're insecure.
So insecurity is going to keep us from developing things that
but having it everywhere.
The innovation.
Having it everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Bringing it to the mainstream.
Yeah. A lot of the reasons why people don't like video cameras or like video cameras recording, like security cameras and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Is
for an invasion of privacy.
Insecurity. They're insecure that people are going to use what they do in their not in their private lives, but in their public life as they're walking around against them, right? And I don't like to be surveilled, ever. No one likes to be surveilled. But there is a certain amount of surveillance that is legitimate, right?
What is that amount, I think, is the
If you have
question.
A convenience store
uh-huh.
setting up multiple cameras so that you don't so that if you're robbed...
So that you don't get robbed blind, right.
Or, but if you are robbed, you can catch the guy who did it, right?
Yeah.
Or you to keep your employees from stealing money from you or something like that. That's correct amount of surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
A company, private...
Private level, yeah.
Company
yeah.
surveying their private property their and private their property, yeah, their sure. companies and watching their employees while the employees
and
work.
Watching their own property.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. To make sure that it's not being taken.
That's proper amount of surveillance. It's right. A private person
yeah.
saying I'm going to privately surveil my own company on closed circuit. Right.
But what amount does the government should the government watch to keep us safe? None at all probably isn't the answer, right? Surely we can we have a Department of Defense for a reason, right? It's called the Department of Defense. That's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And they need intelligence and tips or briefings and memos and things to be able to make decisions based on defending the United States of America.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. We agree with that.
Yeah.
So what's the proper amount? Because we can't take it to the extreme that it's been taken because that's a clear violation of the rights of private citizens.
Yeah.
Private citizens who have the right not to be surveilled on their own personal devices, things they do at home, on their cell phones, on their internet, on their laptops.
Well, I've always heard the old wisdom, and I agree with it, is my rights end where yours begin. Right?
But in terms of keeping people safe...
Well, hold on. Let me explain.
Right. Well, let me
explain the thought process behind that and how I think it relates.
Okay.
My rights end where yours begin, meaning... That I have the right to do what I want until it encroaches on your rights.
Right.
And once when it starts to impinge upon your rights, that's when I have to stop whatever it is I'm doing. So the government has the right to surveillance until it impinges upon the citizen's right to privacy. And that's where I think in the past 10 years we've taken steps. And
riddle me this, though.
But we've taken steps before that. So
let's go into logic bomb territory, though.
Okay.
If you're a criminal,
mm-hmm.
and I use the term criminal loosely, terrorist, soldier, fortune, enemy, whatever you enemy combatant, whatever you want to call that, trying to do harm to either other private citizens or the nation of the United States of America, right? If that's your intent, do you really have rights?
Yes. You still
do
have
you?
Rights. If you're a criminal, yeah, you still have rights. That's what the writ of habeas corpus is about.
Yeah, it's about, sure, about you have some rights,
prisoners
but in terms
of people who have broken the law still having rights.
But in terms of surveillance, where do you really have the right to privacy if your intent is harm on either other private citizens or the nation of the United States of America? Do you really have the right to privacy?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Until you're caught. When you're arrested, that's when your right to privacy ends.
So we should just wait until events
Or until
crises
a judge,
happen.
Until a judge signs a warrant.
Right.
Yeah, you can't...
So
prevent everything. This is not like medicine. This is not like exercising. It's preventative medicine.
So there's where... But I think that's key. That's where it stops then. If a judge makes the decision...
If a judge signs a warrant and says Matt Hume is
an enemy of the state
and needs to have his door busted down because he's been smoking marijuanas again... Like,
I would like to meet that judge. First of all, I'd shake his hand. Then I'd get his autograph.
Really?
Yes. Then I would... Never mind.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, the rights of the government to surveil somebody...
If your door gets kicked in while I'm here, I'm going to laugh and tell them everything I know about you.
It won't be kicked in, ever. My door won't ever be kicked in.
That's debatable, Matt. You do a lot of highly illegal things in here.
Like what? Like smoke weed?
You masturbate...
Masturbation is not illegal.
It should be.
It's not, but it shouldn't ever be.
It should be. It
should never be. I was reading something interesting.
Here we go.
Guess where I read it on?
Reddit. Shocker.
Yep.
Where all the
1908?
Where all the world's best misinformation comes from?
Yeah, it was something like 1908. No, it had to be earlier than that because he passed away.
Back to the original thing,
though.
I really don't know what. I'm gonna have to look up what you're saying about this artificial intelligence thing and see if there's any validity to it.
Yeah, because I think it was 70%, not 30%. That the standard was.
I just don't know why, like, what benefit would a journalistic entity have in not providing that information?
Oh, it's not the journalistic entity.
But who cares? Like, who...
Just like
if the article provided that, what... Me, as the casual morning coffee reader of an article like this, why would I... I'd be like, oh, that's interesting. Computers still aren't as smart as us. Or, oh, they're getting to be as smart as us. Who cares?
Well, let's
I'm going to sip my coffee and take my kids to school, like, every single day.
Sure, but like we're talking about it, right?
Yeah.
Other people have been talking about it, right? The internet's kind of abuzz with it right now, right?
Yeah.
Here's what's been happening lately. Actually, it's happened a lot in the past couple of years. There was a scientist in China who had developed a cure for cancer, he said. And there was recently a bunch of scientists in Belgium who said that they had succeeded in quantum teleportation.
What?
Yeah.
Where can we buy that at? Is that on eBay?
Hold on. These are all substantiated claims and then claims that were later debunked. Because right now with the way the speed at which news moves is that a scientist publishes a paper. Now, according to the long-held traditions of science, you publish your paper, you give it to other scientists to read, mm-hmm. other scientists read your paper, go through your theories, either prove or disprove your theories, and come back with their notes.
Like, say, this is good, this is bad.
That's the whole process of peer review, which is how all science is supposed to be done. Mm-hmm. Your work is supposed to be reviewed by your peers and either proven as correct or incorrect.
Right.
But since we have the internet, and since we have people who are able to, as soon as a scientist publishes a paper, and it's almost always on the internet now, they publish the paper, news sources, journalists, things like that, bloggers, sensationalizers,
yeah,
come along, take what you've published, and before it has a chance to be peer-reviewed, they publish it and say, this is what science is doing right now. But it hasn't had the chance to be peer-reviewed, and that's why we have so much misinformation and disinformation. That's why a month ago or so ago, like 3 or 4 months ago, there was a scientist in China, mm-hmm. not the cancer guy, but a different guy, who said that he could...
always be known as the cancer guy.
he was able to grow stem cells.
Okay.
From regular adult tissue.
Right.
So he's able to take some skin cells and culture stem cells,
right.
Like baby stem cells
right.
from it. Okay, mm-hmm. So the cells where you could make anything you want
right.
out of them for the human body. Yeah, he's proven to be wrong. But before other scientists could get a hold of his papers and say, you're wrong, the internet got a hold of it, and everybody for 2 weeks thought, oh, wow, we can grow kidneys and pancreases and hearts and lungs and breasts like in a laboratory and then just straight...
Implant them
to people
need.
Who need
right.
them or whatever.
Right.
No, you can't. He was disproven. But for a month, he was everybody's darling.
In terms of
until
real
scientists got a hold of his papers and like, no bullshit.
And real quick though, with that type of mindset, because you mentioned that this stuff will go on the internet and then everyone's like, this is what science is doing right now.
Yeah.
That's still somewhat, correct me if I'm wrong, a valid look at least what people are working on, mm-hmm. right? Like, not that this is a huge surprise, but okay, people are working on in the field of artificial intelligence, taking it either mainstream or getting it really well done, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we mm-hmm. know, like, so that's all that this really is in this type of thing.
Sure.
Like, these type of things to say, a scientist did this, a scientist did that, a scientist did this. So it is, you know, yeah, it is based on their papers where they've said, I think I've been able to do this, or this is what I've experienced. You know, for that peer review type thing, but it's still an idea of at least what people are working on. And that's really all necessarily that it is.
Oof, yeah, for right now. But yeah. Yeah. It's basically just sensationalizers who try to pull headlines out of their butt because everybody's like, oh, well, I am a blogger for the Huffington Post or I'm a blogger for the New York Post or whatever, or the Independent.
Yeah.
And if you can find a guy who just published a paper and you can extrapolate
that
something sensational
out of it. Yeah.
And then post it and you can get a... See, it doesn't matter anymore because you can print a retraction. You can post a retraction an hour later.
And a quarter of the people read that.
Read that. 10%.
Yeah. If that, yeah.
And so it doesn't matter... Whether or not
how many ads they were able to sell on that article.
Exactly. It matters how much foot traffic you get.
Yeah.
And how much foot traffic your parent website gets.
Yeah.
That's going to determine whether or not you get to move up in the ladder.
That's why I pretty much rely on The Onion for all my news.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Onion is probably the best for true news.
Probably the most reliable,
yep.
to be honest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting story. Taking a look at the headline there. Why don't you read the headline for us?
Teacher, 34, accused of kidnapping three students after asking them for a ride.
CBS, Los Angeles. The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, Altadena Station, says a 34-year-old high school teacher kidnapped three juveniles on Saturday evening asking them for a ride. John Edward Maust is now behind bars, authorities said. Officials alleged that on Saturday around 9:35 p.m., three juveniles were driving in the area of Ganesha Avenue and East Mariposa Street in Altadena. The students said they noticed Maust, one of their teachers, standing on the sidewalk, apparently intoxicated. They said Maust asked for a ride, and they agreed. During the ride, the students said, now this is the part that's interesting to me, because so he asks for a ride, and whether he's drunk or not, you know, these kids are, whether it was a charitable, try and be nice thing or not, you know, okay, sure, we can give you a ride. It's not a problem. There's three of us in the car. We know who you are. You can't rape all of us at once. Come on.
Sure,
in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd have to take turns. We'd have to take turns.
Right.
And who seriously wants to take turns?
Or someone's going to cry foul at the first turn, mm-hmm. I would think.
Sure.
During the ride, so he's already in the vehicle riding with these youths.
Mm-hmm.
During the ride, the student said Maust began to say things that got them worried, and they pulled over. The student said they got out of the vehicle, but Maust ordered them back in and said he wanted to go to Jack in the Box. So they all get out of the vehicle, one of their vehicles, I'm assuming. And he says, get back in the vehicle. I want to go to Jack in the Box. Three students said they feared for their safety, got back into the car. At this time, they said the teacher pulled a knife on them.
Okay. This is somebody who should not be teaching. This is someone with a drinking problem who should not be teaching.
I think of all the things.
Anytime someone says, I want to go to Jack in the Box.
And then is willing to pull a knife on that point.
They've been drinking.
Right.
Yeah.
That's about it. During the alleged kidnapping, one of the juveniles was able to call 911. Shortly after, and this is pretty good, shortly after, the teacher allegedly heard an LASD helicopter overhead and ordered the driver to stop. So they sent a helicopter out for these three kidnapped youths. Matt just yawned. These three kidnapped youths. And he heard the helicopter, ordered them stop. Teacher got out of the car and fled. So he got out of the car and just took off running.
This person should not be teaching.
I think that's pretty clear.
Anybody.
Yeah. Anyways, I saw the headline. I thought it was...
No. I have a pretty good headline to update our listeners because they know that I'm a big fan of Pope Francis.
Yeah.
Pope
What's
Frankie?
Been going on with Frankie lately?
Let me tell you, ladies,
I haven't heard much about him.
In old Pope Frankie's life. He recently just...
Did he just marry a gay or something?
No,
like,
he just...
He
cleaned house. He fired the entire board of directors.
Over the old Vatican?
Oh, the entire financial board.
Really?
For the Vatican. Got rid of everybody. Everyone.
No kidding. Top to bottom, just you're out.
Of their financial watchdog, so the group that runs their finances and everything, that keeps the Vatican supposedly on the up and up.
Uh-huh.
He got rid of everybody.
That doesn't sound good.
What it sounds like is it sounds like he's reforming, because this is the same...
Or it sounds like corruption waiting to happen.
No. The Vatican has been funneling money for the mafia and for the mob for years. For all these... guerrilla groups in South America.
Catholic Italians.
You know, there's a lot of money that gets funneled through the Vatican because they have no oversight over them, period, whatsoever.
Because of their own country, nation, state thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've been, if you want to bank with a company, or you want to bank and you're large enough to have billions of dollars.
Right.
But you don't want to bank with a normal bank, you go to the Vatican.
Do they act as a bank?
Privately, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
How?
And it's all for illegal stuff. It's all for stuff you couldn't get away with in the United States or even with the IMF, okay? Now, when the stuff you're doing is too shady
for the
IMF,
biggest banks in the world, right?
And Goldman Sachs and the World Bank, if what you're doing is too shady to keep your money there or to launder your money through that, you go to the Vatican.
A religious institution.
But what it does, it gives me hope because what was one of the first...
Is that the reason, though? Like, do we know that that's the reason?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, like I said, at first glance, it sounds shady because, like, well, if you're going to fire everybody that watches where the money goes, then you can put the money wherever you want.
Yeah, but he fired them because they're people who are
who have been
letting the money go wherever they want it to
and
go.
I'm guessing these are probably old white dudes that have been doing this for years and years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he fired them all.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And a lot of people do think it's kind of a PR stunt.
While marrying a gay or no?
No. A lot of people do think it's a PR stunt, but I mean, see, these are the old guys, the old priests, who have been doing and running this thing for 40 years, and it's the same people in the same group.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to get any sort of financial transparency for what the Vatican is doing and what the Vatican has done, you really do have to get the power out of the situation.
Right. Because they're basically, and right now or ever, there's no transparency at all.
No.
It's just a closed system of we're the Vatican, and yeah. So you don't ask questions and we do what we want.
And so
when it comes to money or priests whatever.
Pope Francis has been doing some really good things the past year. Really good start is getting rid of the financial corruption in the Vatican.
Mm-hmm.
In the Vatican. It's a great way to start, but it's not nearly going to be enough, because if you really want to atone for the sins of the Catholic Church, you need to give away all the money that the Catholic Church has to the families of those boys who got raped and all the children who've been raped over the past 100 years.
That's a bold statement, Mr. Hume.
How is it bold? How is it bold to say that the financial church, the Catholic Church or the financial church, Freudian slip there, the financial Catholic Church should bankrupt themselves, making amends for what they did, and not only for what people who were part of their organization did, but the Catholic Church covered it up for 40 years.
I'm certainly not saying
that that's
not a big deal.
Every pope knew what was going on, and they actively covered it up.
Don't get me wrong. From the ground up, that's wrong. They shouldn't have done that, and I'm no way saying that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But it is bold words to say, because the Vatican's worth, like, what do they have? Like, billions of dollars?
Trillions,
right?
Probably.
Yeah.
Of net worth.
That's probably not even getting into, like, what the grounds themselves are worth or the artifacts of the church itself.
I'm not saying give away the Vatican City, but what I am saying is empty your coffers. What do you think, Jesus is too poor to give the Catholic Church more money? I guarantee you, if the Catholic Church were to empty all their coffers and say, okay, to these 500,000 people who were sexually
just
abused...
Just families of... Right.
Families, people who are sexually abused, whatever, we're going to give away all our money to you.
Right.
And you can even, pick a parish, and that could be your private parish. You're the only one who can go there. Or whatever.
Yeah.
We'll give you the building, whatever.
Right.
Do not think that the Catholic Church within months would have more than enough money that they need from people giving...
At the very least for operating costs. Sure.
Yeah.
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 There's
no
way.
You're right.
There's
yeah.
no way, even if they gave away all their money, there's no way they would be bankrupt.
The piety of the Catholic Church would make up for that.
Yeah. They'd be like, Catholics all really over the quick. World would say, oh, well, the Catholic Church needs money now, so they would give you even more.
Like yeah.
Yeah. If it's a smart enough religion, the Catholic Church has been going for like 1,700 years now. Going
strong. I think they know a few things, right?
Yeah, If the bubonic plague and Protestants couldn't kill the Catholic Church, then neither
then,
can bankruptcy.
Then a couple
bankruptcy.
Of priests won't
yeah,
either.
Yeah, then bankruptcy couldn't either. Can't either. But yeah, it's a good start for maybe a new era in the Catholic Church, and maybe a new era in Western religion, but it's not nearly enough, because the Catholic Church did some gross, atrocious things that, you know, if there is a hell,
do you not
a lot
believe
of priests
there's a hell,
there.
Matt?
There's going to be a lot of priests there. What does the Bible say about it?
As far as your own personal belief, though.
Yeah, but what does the Bible say about it? So we know I'm a pendulum. We know I swing back and forth.
Yeah,
we know that I may or may not believe in God, or that one exists.
Without getting into a ton of detail, from what I understand, here's the basics about hell in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
From my lips to your ears, dear listener, it is a place that was created for Satan, who was the supreme angel,
mm-hmm.
who was fallen from God's grace and became his archenemy, and the host of angels that followed him. Mm-hmm. It's a place that is created for them.
Mm-hmm.
And through our free will, the humans that choose not to accept Jesus Christ as their savior will go there because they chose to reject God's plan for them in accepting Christ as his son and believing in him as the redemption for their sins. Correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty much.
In the Christian narrative.
Yes. Of the, the Judeo-Christian Bible.
With the Christian Bible.
Okay.
The Old Testament and Torah doesn't mention anything about a lake of fire.
Or a hell, right.
The imagery we have of hell,
uh-huh.
the word hell
uh-huh.
is Greek-rooted.
Yeah.
But it was also, it comes from...
Well, in Hebrew, it was like death and Hades, right? It was like separation from God.
Sheol.
Right.
And in so to the Greek mind, to the Roman Catholic mind, to the Protestant mind, to the Christian mind, the Western Christian mind, it's linked with this imagery that we get from Revelation, which is mentioned one time in Revelation, the lake of fire, prepared for the devil and his angels.
Right.
Okay? Which is what it says. So that's where we get the imagery of hell. Okay, that being the worst part of hell. The Hebrew tradition, however, has Sheol, or the place of death. Okay, so is it a literal place where the dead are still alive, but
are there
dead?
Spirits or whatever? Right.
No, it's the place of death. Sheol is death. It's oblivion. It's nothingness. But more than that, it is a complete total separation of God from God.
That's what I was just about to say. I have always thought, and I'm cutting you off here, but I really want to say this. I have always thought, and kind of have seen it indicated in Scripture, that this idea of like just a flaming place where everybody's hanging out and it's awful, right, is maybe not quite accurate. And the biggest problem with damnation or something other than heaven, I guess, is how I'll define it. The biggest torture for us as humans who would go there would be separation from God. Because even here on the earth, if you reject God or you reject God's plan of salvation or whatever you want to call it, right, you're willfully rejecting, but God is still here on the earth and around you and active in your life to some degree, if you believe that, right? Whereas that is complete separation from anything of God. So it's not his creation, his attributes. I think whatever is a part of us, you know, it says that we're made in his image. I think whatever that means is taken from us. And I think it's a separation from everything that is influenced by God.
Yeah.
Which if you buy into the narrative, I sound like a skeptic myself there, but if you buy into the narrative that God created us, that we're created in his image, then... And all our lives, right, we've known an influence of this God.
Yeah.
Then that truly is the worst thing because we don't. It's an incomprehensible torture that we can't even wrap our minds around because all of our lives we've known God, even if you don't believe in him, right? Because if you buy into that narrative, he made creation, right? So everything around you, everything in your life, all the good things that you enjoy as an atheist or a Buddhist or whatever came from God, right? Yeah. Everything good that you see and say, I like this part of life, he gave to you, if you buy into that. So all of those things are now gone and separated from us, including that we're made in his image. However that computes, I don't, you know, obviously don't know. But that's long been my opinion or thoughts on that. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's a lot of what I was going to say. But the Hebrew tradition doesn't have a place for punishment,
right?
Just like it doesn't really have a place for heaven. Like you go to heaven when you die. Which I think that the Western idea and mindset of heaven and hell is totally messed up. Because it's totally me-centric.
Well, but in the Old Testament, though, a couple of people walked with God.
Yeah.
Like, he took them up.
Yeah. Talks about Abraham's bosom.
Mm-hmm.
But that is...
But there's no real imagery given there.
No, there's no imagery of...
You're with God now.
You're going to heaven. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it is with... You're just with God right now. Okay, because that's... Listen, let me fully flesh out the thought.
Mm-hmm.
But... What happens, according to the Hebrew tradition, but what I think, if God exists, what actually happens is you go back to God. You go back to a oneness and a fullness and a completion that your mission, whatever it was on this earth, is over and done, and you're back to what you originally were, which is a part of perfect creation.
Adam would have been in the garden.
A perfect singularity of creation. And I think it's more than that. I think it's the individual no longer exists. I don't think in heaven, quote unquote. For instance, this heaven is real bullshit. Okay?
Okay.
If I want to get my theology from a fucking 4-year-old, okay, I watch Blue's Clues or Sesame Street.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
No 4-year-old's going to come to me after he's been brainwashed by his parents his entire life and say, oh, I had a dream where I died and went to heaven, and or he had a near-death experience where he died and went to heaven. No, he's been brainwashed his entire life. So, yes, he's going to have that because that's all his brain knows. All the information his brain has beyond mommy, daddy, me, and my brother is Jesus. So, yes, he is going to have that sort of experience when he has a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
His mind is going to try to flush out the trauma of what his body's going through. His mind is going to fill itself with what he would have in a dreamscape.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there's no conclusive proof there. And anybody who watches that movie and says, oh, this tells me heaven is real, and gets that warm feeling in their heart about how they're going to heaven when they die, it's complete stupid bullshit. Because heaven is not going and being with God and getting your own mansion. And
but Christ did say, I go to prepare a place for you.
Yes.
Right.
A place.
Right. So I think that's key, because the phrasing, the verbiage is...
Is that a physical place? Is that a spiritual place? Is that the place that you always belonged before you were created?
Ask Christ.
Okay. It's not a physical place.
Right.
It's not, I get a mansion. It's not... Because we've turned it into, oh, when I get to heaven, I get what I've always wanted. I get what I've always wanted when I'm here on Earth.
I think there's a big part of that.
Oh, I think it's all part of it. I think that's exactly why so many people are Christians, is because they have this dream that when they get to heaven, they'll have a mansion with servants, and they'll be able to eat whatever they want, and it's just going to be every single proclivity and everything they ever enjoyed on Earth is going to be in heaven, and it's going to be a million times better.
And I've never bought into that, because
that's not the case.
Every part of life down here, like what I was saying earlier, every part of life down here there's equal amounts, right? Like if you buy into even scripture, right? God created us; He created us in His image. Everything around us is an attribute of God.
Yeah,
in some ways, right? And I'm not one of those people that, like, you know, God is in everything, but everything around us has attributes of God.
Mm-hmm.
So when not only will if there's a bad place or a separation, will that completely change? But the idea of being wholly His, and that's why I don't think we understand the garden either. Because if you buy the narrative that man was perfect in the garden before he made that decision, that would have basically been heaven, quote unquote, right? Like because man's relationship with God was untainted by any selfish desire or sin of this world.
Yeah.
Which we don't know and have not known since then.
Yeah.
So our concept of that has, like you said, you know, for hundreds of years been filled in the blanks by preachers who have told us that we'll be going to a place with mansions and streets of gold.
By preachers embellishing to try and get people back into the pews.
But on the flip side, not only do we not know how bad that badness would be, but I don't think we'll know how good that goodness will be in a way that we don't even comprehend.
Yeah.
Because we've grown up in a society that says if you have a big car and a white fence and a house on a hill, that's all good stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that ultimate connection with God, if you believe that that's what will happen after accepting His plan for salvation, I think it's something that we can't even really wrap our minds around, right? And the only thing in Scripture is it's said that we'll spend our time praising God,
yeah,
right? Like we're there with Him and a part of Him for His glory, you know, which I don't think necessarily corresponds to a buffet and a nice mansion.
I think it's heaven is the sacraments.
The sacraments.
Heaven is the sacraments. Communion, baptism, prayer. It's
worship.
Worship. It's elements of those things, but it communion, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're taking in and you're giving up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? you're becoming a part of, and you're having something become a part of you.
Right, because why would Jesus just say that about the about communion? Like, do this till I come.
Baptism.
Like, I really don't think it's the way the church does it now.
Baptism.
I could talk for an hour about how I don't think that
life and
four times a year taking a cracker is what Jesus meant.
Baptism, life and death, the right. immersion into something you don't understand and something that you're afraid of, water.
Right.
Okay, every human has a fear of water, no matter
who. Because we could die in it.
Exactly.
Because
it's deadly. The immersion in something you don't understand and something you fear, and then coming up into something that is new and totally unexpected. That picture, the sacrament of prayer, closing yourself off and to everything else and focusing on a deity who may or may not exist.
You're so...
worship.
Just ride your skeptic train.
I think that heaven...
I love how you won't say it on this show. I love it. By the way, if I could quickly say... There's a lot of people, fans of the show, and there are many, fans of the show who hate that you won't say it.
That I won't say whether or not I'm a Christian?
Yeah.
Good.
I dig it, because when we go on tour, they'll get to corner you on their own and be like, Matt, what the hell? Why don't you believe in God?
And you'll
say, I never said I don't believe in God. And then they'll say, but do you believe in God? And you'll say, I didn't say that I believe in God.
And I
want to see that in person.
If they ask me in person, I will give them a very specific answer.
What's that?
The same answer I give them on the show. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because it...
We've been around this bush before.
But anybody asking another person and saying, what do you believe?
Mm-hmm.
9 times out of 10, they're asking you that so that they can judge it against what they believe. It's a question.
I think almost 10 times out of 10.
Yeah,
I mean,
but it's a question of self-reflection. If you say to somebody, "Are you a Christian?" You're either looking for confirmation, or you're looking for an opportunity to evangelize, or you're looking for a fight.
I mean,
that's kind of what I meant by opportunity to evangelize. But you're looking for some sort of confirmation outside of yourself that what you believe is correct.
Yeah.
And I don't need another person to tell me whether or not, or confirm or deny for me about what I believe. My beliefs are my own, and they're my beliefs for a very good reason.
And
I've studied and I've applied myself to believing in what I believe, and I've understood
out what you believe,
and personal reflection, and it's not something an introspection, and it's I don't need other people's points of view to verify what I already believe, or what I already know, so it's not,
I think to boil this down though, if I had to say, if like that age old question that we're forced to ask as children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you know where you're going when you die?
If you were to die tonight, where would you go?
Yeah.
In the ground.
Here's my,
to the morgue for a couple days.
Yeah, to be picked over and then viewed by my family.
Yeah,
that's a weird process, right? Can we just say that? Like, that's,
yeah,
like funerals in America, when you go and there's like their face there, like that's, I'm fine with a good picture, right? Like, let me see a smile of him
I've already told my mom, because in case I die, I've already told her.
Which could be very soon.
Yeah, I've already...
The way
I've
that
already,
you eat. And
I've already very specifically told her, cremate my body.
You're a cremator. Those are weird too, though.
Morgue, you can cremate your body in the morgue. Cremate my body in the morgue.
Uh-huh.
Take whatever organs you need and give them away. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you want your ashes to be kept, though?
Or give my body to science.
Because people that do those urn things, that's weird.
No, not really. I wouldn't mind if they spread it out somewhere nice and pretty.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't matter where. Like, even giving my body to science, that's fine. But no funeral home.
Mm-hmm.
No funeral home. No burial plot or spot.
Mm-hmm.
No spending any more money than you absolutely, positively, 100% have to.
To be cremated,
and if
basically
you donate your body to science, a lot of times, whatever scientific foundation you're donating it to will pay for your expenses for the removal of the body, which means you don't have to pay for anything unless you want to have a funeral, quote-unquote, in a funeral home.
Right.
But just have a wake at
but
somebody's
you could do
house.
But in a church or wherever.
Yeah,
right.
Have a wake at somebody's
or a
house.
Park.
Or not. Don't even celebrate it. Just be like, oh, yeah. Did you hear Matt died? Oh. Yeah. Yeah, yesterday is from.
So I'll just tweet it.
Yeah.
Then when it happens, I'll.
Yeah.
By the way, everybody, Suburban Wizard is dead. Uh-huh. There'll be a show next week. Thank you for following.
Yeah, he died of trying to pass 2 gallons of creamy peanut butter, and it's just
in
it
the
was
process.
Yeah, it was just yeah. grease and blood everywhere, all over the bathroom.
He's gone.
Yeah, he went out like Elvis.
He went out like he came in, and uh-huh. just you know all the cliches, and he died doing what he loved.
Yeah. Oh, so when's the funeral? There is no funeral. Yeah, just.
Matt's
when,
dead.
Yeah, when next time you're at home and Matt crosses your mind, just
have a moment there.
Just have
and
a moment
all
there.
All those collective moments will uh-huh. be at a funeral.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah. Pour out a 40 a stag over the picture of a fat girl. buy an issue of Voluptuous magazine and just like pour. No. Get a Lane Bryant catalog. And just pour a 40 a stag on top of the Lane Bryant catalog, and that'll
while
be
while eating peanut butter,
yeah,
and Cheez-Its,
yeah,
and that is the best service.
That's
right
exactly
there.
That's what I want my wake
that's
to be.
That's memoriam. That's everything you need
uh-huh.
in an 8 to 10 minute interval.
Yeah, and then have somebody stand up and give a long winded speech about a topic nobody cares about,
right?
And their deep personal convictions,
and then it'll basically. Then you won't even be gone.
Yeah.
Because everything about you will be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, there's a couple people. I'm going to haunt the hell out of them.
Right.
I'm going to haunt
them. If you get
like,
to come back, yeah.
No, I'm coming back. If you can come back, coming back.
You're going to buy, barter, cheat your way back. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've always told people that there's no such things as ghosts.
Uh-huh.
And there's not.
Right. Until you die.
But if I die,
mm-hmm.
when I die, if I can come back as a ghost... I'm definitely going to do it just to prove to myself that it either can or can't be done.
Right.
So
that and how glorious will that first wall that you walk through be? It'd just be like years of adult human life. I believe that this doesn't exist as you just float through
a wall.
No,
it'll be bittersweet because number one, I'll be able to float through a wall and haunt people.
Right.
But number two, I will have been proven wrong.
You'll just be the saddest ghost in the world.
So I won't be able to haunt anybody I know because if I was like, ooh, Jean, I'm haunting you. And she's like, Matt?
You don't believe in ghosts.
I'd be like, yeah, Gene, it's me. Hey. She's like, you don't believe in ghosts? And I would have to say, yeah, I'm wrong. I was wrong on that one. Sorry. So I couldn't haunt people that I knew
right.
because then I would have to admit to being wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is something I never do.
So you'll be the saddest ghost in the world.
Yeah, I would.
You'll just be carrying chains and wailing mm-hmm. about your own wrongness.
No one who I ever haunted would know my backstory. And that lack of context as a writer would just kill me.
Yeah.
Just couldn't do it.
Anyways, okay, back to where we were. So that age-old question, where would you go when you die? My answer to that would be, in a way that is not, I mean, it would be different than if a kid asked me that in the mall, like,
mm-hmm.
believe me. But my answer to that would be, I believe that there are one of two places that the human consciousness will go when they die, based on the choices they make here on Earth and the beliefs they have. And that those two places are defined as separation from God or with God.
Yeah.
I don't know the construct of those. My human mind has never known either one of those. And so I can't wrap my head around it, but I believe that's the two places that are an option when you die.
Mm.
That's if I had to say that's what you believe. And whatever you need to put on those, you want to call them heaven, you want to call them hell, and then you want to add all of your ideas of you know lakes of fire or mansions or whatever or praising God. Be that all as it may, that's your own interpretation. My interpretation of it, in the way that I know is true. Or that I believe is based on faith is that it's either separation from God or being with God.
Yeah.
And I don't know beyond that what that's going to be like.
Because
my human mind doesn't have a frame of reference for that. You know, I've been away from people that I love for a long time, but it doesn't compute with being away from what you were created to be around. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like God, ultimately, if you believe that God did create us to be with him. Right.
Yeah.
So we have no concept of what it's like to be completely separated from that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and honestly, I do think at a certain point it probably goes to like, you know, the parent that's like, that hurt me more than it hurt you. Like, I think that probably goes for God in this separation. Like, I really don't think he wants to see any of, if you believe it all, I don't think he wants to see anything that he created separated from him.
Yeah.
That's certainly not his goal. But that's what I believe.
And I think that it's that anything that he created.
Yeah.
Separated from, because you know, the ultimate plan of the universe is that,
because God doesn't shed a tear when an elephant dies. That's a fact.
You had a breaking of intent of the cosmos, of when sin entered the world, you had a breaking.
Yeah.
And everything, this grand story of the Bible, this grand story of religion and faith and Christianity and Judaism, and it's all been about, after this breaking, everything coming together.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love the Chronicles of Narnia so much, because it is such a great allegory. But it's everything, especially when you get into like the Magician's Nephew and stuff like that in the last battle. It you get into this.
The only one I ever read was the last battle, and I was confused as hell.
Well, because you didn't know the backstory.
I didn't. I was just like, context. There's a talking lion.
Yeah.
And...
But it's all about everything coming back together. And if all these pieces that broke come back together, but they're missing millions of pieces that are lost. Like, it's not the same piece.
It's not the same creation,
if it's you want to use that word. It's not going to come together the way it should have when it was first started. So
that is where
ultimately the melancholy of all religion comes into play, is that it will never be what you thought it was supposed to be.
Isn't that weird? Like,
yeah.
And it's kind of weird. Here's a big weird thought. People are probably going to think we're high for this, but I'm not. You might be, but I'm not.
No. Not.
If God, this is so big, I'm trying to figure out how to word it. How can God ever be okay with anything other than what he perfectly created, right? Like, if you buy the narrative of the Bible, God created the perfect garden.
Mm-hmm.
Man, woman, his perfect creation, bam. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, they're happy. He's happy. They're walking with God.
Yeah.
It says they walked with God in the cool of the day. I don't think we know what that means. I don't think no worship service or prayer or anything will ever get us close to that. So it's perfection, right? God?
It was perfection in the garden.
Right.
The
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
It was already kind of sinful at that point.
Well, we don't know.
The Bible tells us that we do.
Well, what do you mean?
The Revelation talks about how the dragon was cast down to earth. And you can extrapolate
from
the
timeline I thought that was after the...
No, it's...
Because the serpent was in there. Right.
The beast was cast from heaven to earth,
yeah.
Which is before time. So if the serpent in the garden was also the dragon who was thrown from heaven,
mm-hmm.
then that means that him being thrown from heaven happened before.
Right.
Which he was tossed down to...
So there's some type of sinfulness.
...plane of earth... And so if the serpent was able to tempt Adam and Eve in the garden, then that means there was already sin on earth at that point.
In some form, yeah.
Because of Satan. There was already, and not, I don't, when I,
see,
I say sin, but I don't mean sin, I mean rebellion. There was some sort of rebellion or pride on earth first. Because God created the garden east of Eden and set the man and woman in it, and there he walked in communion with them in the cool of the day. Because God created the... came to them on the holy place of Mount Sinai to Abraham,
mm-hmm.
and then to Moses, and then
and there were other holy Isaac, places,
and then the holy place in the wilderness, and then the tabernacle, and then the temple, and then the man Jesus Christ, and now finally the indwelling of each believer through the power empowerment of the Holy Spirit. So God has never doesn't come down to earth unless it is in some sort of holy
consecrated place.
Consecrated ground.
Yeah.
Why? Because earth has been sinful. Earth has been sinful and prideful and willful and corrupted for billions of years.
Yeah.
Long before man came along.
Well, and you got to look...
By the beast Satan.
Because looking at that timeline, when God...
That's why they call him the prince of the power of the air. He's the universe is his. The physical universe belongs to Satan.
Right. And how much... Look at that narrative, though. How much would it have broke God's heart at the point when he threw, because that would have been the ultimate, because creation happened before he threw the angels out, right? Or through
yes.
Satan, who made the choice, and the rest of his angels that were like, well, we're going to side with him, you know? By the way, how dumb must have those angels been, right? Like, I get that Satan was beautiful and he was the best angel other than God. And the reason he had to be thrown out is because he's like, I can be like God, which of course God can't have any of that. So he tossed him out. But how many, like, those angels had to be really dumb.
The Archangel Michael tossed him out.
But those angels had to have been really stupid to be like, oh yeah, I guess we'll go with him. Like,
pride is blinding.
The dumbest angels on
pride,
the planet.
Pride is blinding. No, anyways, not dumb, prideful.
But as that decision, because at that point, sin, rebellion against God, against God's will, that would have been the ultimate entrance into, I was going to say humankind, but there it wasn't even humankind at that point, into consciousness, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the construct of the perfect world that God created, the perfect creation that he created.
Yeah.
You know, and then when he tossed him down, like you said, then he was on the earth in some form. Yeah. So. Anyways, this has been Philosophy with Matt and Addison.
Well, religious philosophy.
Yeah. I really wasn't planning for this show to go in the direction that it did, right, an hour and 24 minutes.
That's fine. It went where it went.
It did.
I'm happy with it. We talked about some stuff.
I feel like it was a good show. I feel like we aired some things out. We still don't know. You still won't answer the burning question. And I keep hearing from
people. Am I a Christian? I don't know.
I keep hearing from people about how it...
If I don't know if I'm a Christian, how can I tell other people that I'm a Christian?
Well, but you have to.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do. You have to go tell people. You have to. What you should do is start by asking them where they're going when they die.
Yeah, right.
And then
we have a great commission, not a great evangelistic program.
Well, we don't have a great one. Would you like to step up in the church and create one?
No. He says God has called some to be evangelists. Some.
It does.
Some.
It does.
Not everybody. And some.
I think I've mentioned this before.
Mm-hmm.
My church, and I'm not going to get into it. This is an ad for my church. It's totally not what it is. But my church has this concept that they keep harping on, or this phrase and this verbiage that my pastor in particular uses about the red apples, right? Like people that are ready to be brought to God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's key in noting that, because there are some people that no matter how hard you might want to share with them, they're not ready.
Yeah.
Because even if you believe that whole thing, you or the listener, whoever, someone's not going to make that choice unless God has already been working with them,
mm-hmm.
right, in their own spirit.
Yeah.
Whether that's by the influences of creation or the influences in their life or things that happen to them or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
That ground isn't ready to be traveled in their life until it is.
Yeah.
And you are not going to blaze that path if it's not ready to be blazed, period. Yeah. There's no way you will. And I really like that at least in my church, from what I've seen, there's some conscious idea of this isn't always like what you should do. Like mm-hmm. you shouldn't just throw the gospel at people.
No, you necessarily. Shouldn't. Also, you shouldn't be looking to pick fruit that's not in your area. Like if you climb up a tree, an apple tree, mm-hmm. pick some apples,
mm-hmm.
and you're picking apples around
you. Don't climb up there and wish for peaches.
Well, no, you look over to the tree next to you, and you see a piece of an apple that's really ready. It's ready to be picked right now. Like, you don't climb down your ladder and go to the next tree and climb up just to pick that one apple. You stay where you are, and you wait for whoever's going to climb that tree next to pick that apple.
Whether that be you or somebody else.
Whether it's you or somebody else, but most of the time it's probably not going to be you. It's just going to be somebody else who gets to pick that apple. But just because you see an apple that's ready to be picked doesn't mean you go pick it. You stay where you're supposed to be, where you called to be, on the ladder you're supposed to be, in the tree you're supposed to be, and you pick the apples that are ripe around you. Okay?
It's a very... I know what you're saying, man.
It's a great dynamic that Jesus laid out in New Testament. He said, go and make disciples, not converts, disciples, which is like more like a Jedi, like a Padawan learner, okay? Like somebody who grows up with you, learning from you, and you teach them over decades. That's a disciple. Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and Son and the Holy Spirit. Teaching them to observe all things I've commanded you, law, I'll be with you always, even to the end of the earth, blah, 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 blah. But then he also says, in Judea and Samaria, and in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and even the ends of the earth. He's talking about spheres of influence. He says, preach to people in Jerusalem and in the country of Judea around them and in Samaria, the country just north of us, and in the rest of the world. So as your circle of influence grows, so should your influence in everything, not just in work or family or whatever, but in the ability to spread your philosophy, whatever that philosophy may be, whether it's Christianity or whether it's, you know, theism or anti-theism. Doesn't matter.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Am I a Christian? I don't know.
Maybe. When we start doing live shows, you're going to have to answer this.
Probably not, though. I'm definitely not a Christian like most people are Christian. If I'm a Christian, I'm not a Christian like most people are.
I'm not either.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should be. But anyway, we've been talking about this for too long. We have,
and like I said, I'd
now we're just beating a dead horse and kind of talking in circles. So
I haven't planned for the show to go this way, but it did. If you don't like it, that's fine.
Yeah, if you don't like it, suck it.
Suck it, and feel free to let us know on Twitter at @suburban_wizard. That's Matt. The bespectacled Matt sitting across from me. Level 31 wizard now.
Level 31.
If you didn't listen to last week's episode, he had a bit of an issue with the council, and he's
the Wizard Commission.
The Wizard Commission. Mm-hmm. And he's been demoted, so that's kind of an embarrassing thing. You can go back and listen to that if you would like to.
Well, why don't you bring it up again for people to hear about?
Well, I'm trying to get listens on our last episode,
oh,
too.
That's true.
See, okay. A little cross-promotion there. Yeah. I am Addison Todd at Addison Todd. Let me know if you loved the show or hated it on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. Facebook.com/givethatsomethought. Click on all the things. Give us a like, a couple of retweets, a couple of favorites. Let us know what you think. We appreciate you, the listener, is what I'm trying
to
say.
Yes, we do.
Bottom line. Couldn't do this without you. I love hearing comments. I love running into people and being like, you guys talked about this the other day on the show, and it was maddening. I love that. I love it. I love it even more if it's about you. If it's about me, I'm like, well, I didn't.
Yeah, then you actually have to defend what you said.
Yeah, exactly.
Live and in person.
Yeah. Which is always a good time. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we will see you next week. This has been Give That Some Thought, episode number 32. So we have another level than you have in your wizardry.
Yeah. Hey, guess what?
Did you get pumped back up?
No, it's been a year, man.
Are you serious?
Yeah. The show's a year old. I think June 6th of last year was when we put out our first episode.
This is our year anniversary?
Oh, yeah, pretty much,
you tell
yeah.
me this now? That yeah. I feel like we should have done something special.
No, but this is better. It's just you and me now. Who else is listening right now? No, they've already tuned out. They heard that.
They heard the closing. Yeah, yeah.
They heard you giving out Twitter handles. I was like, all right, I'd tune out. No, it's just you and me now, bro.
That's
a year.
Awesome,
high five.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
Fist bump.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 1 year. Give That Some Thoughts. 1 year old.
Mm-hmm.
We've been through so much. Been through so much together.
Yeah, this is not a joke. Seriously. Past year.
It's been a lot. I've had a kid. You've lost several jobs and become a bigger kid yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some great bits. We've had some great laughs.
We've had some pretty terrible bits, too.
We've had some terrible bits. We've had some tears.
Yeah.
It's been a good time. Wow. Look forward to the next year with you.
Absolutely.
Mr. Hume.
This next year is going to be better.
It probably is.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody out there in Audio Land. We'll see you next week.
This has been a production of Tripod Broadcasting.